It's Wednesday, April 2nd, 2008, and you're listening to episode 96 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 59 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Luke.
My name is Matt.
And damn John and Chris both for standing us up tonight. Chris had some lame excuse about,
I've got to wake up early to drive a million miles.
I've got to move and sign papers on my house. And John's, oh, my car broke down. Come on.
In John's defense, he does have a class tonight.
So what?
We are recording ridiculously late. Because
my grandpa used to have to walk uphill both ways to record a podcast on gaming back in the 1920s. And damn it, he did it.
You know, Chris just accomplished a feat far more impressive than that by selling a house in this market. Yeah, exactly.
That's good. That's fine.
They
fine work.
Told me his wife popped out a 16th kid or whatever, and that was going to be impressive.
I don't know.
Too.
He's got two or three basketball teams at this point. I mean, he could have his own March Madness, from what I understand.
We're going to have to hire Vin Diesel to be a living maid for him.
Well, he used to DM, so you got that already taken care of.
Yeah, he is the perfect nanny. Probably not cheap, though.
No,
not
inexpensive.
Hot. All right, not the perfect nanny, but close.
Second best. Yeah.
And my boss at work used to get Swiss au pairs, but, you know, hey.
If you have German au pairs, you might accidentally kill your wife or purposely kill your wife. And I guess you guys didn't hear about that story.
No,
never mind.
I didn't.
Yeah, it's a couple years old now. There's a pretty big murder. Never mind.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Great
How
podcast.
How do you differentiate between the little murders and the big murders?
When you completely dismember the corpse and keep it in your garage.
Okay, then.
This isn't the one recently where they found the torso in a duffel bag, is it?
It was in a plastic bag in the garage, like in a plastic container.
Some people are just so pleasant. All right,
why are we talking about this?
I don't know.
Hey, welcome to Fear the Boot. Murder. Death.
And the reason Onasol is all.
All right, we got a bunch of announcements to go through.
Wow, we're going to a really dark place. I don't know if I agree with this. To the announcements.
All right, to the announcements. We've got a bunch of announcements. We're going to do these fairly rapid fire just to avoid turning this into the announcement show like we were getting there for a while. So here we go. First of all, John and I are going to be in New York this coming weekend. I believe, if I have my dates right on when this drops, we'll be there April 4th through the 6th.
To accept a major award.
Yes, we're going to be up there
Fragile.
To do some panels, hang out, meet some people, and also we accept the Robin D. Laws Award for Excellence in Gaming. So if you are up in the New York area, definitely stop by, check that out, say hi. Speaking of cons, we've got two other cons we'd like to mention. First of all, Luke, you had something on DICON.
Yes, DICON's coming up here in St. Louis, and the big thing about it is it's going to be Privateer Weekend here for fans of Privateer Press and War Machines and Hordes. War Machines, that was plural all of a sudden. I don't know why. But for the entry fee into the con, which it happens on May 31st, June 1st, June 2nd, with your entry fee into the con, which is 30 at the door, 25 pre-reg, you get 7+ Privateer Press events. There are a ton of tournaments going on, and we have our very own hardcore tournament, which is a big deal for those of you who know what War Machine is. So please, if you're anywhere near St. Louis and you love War Machine, come on out. It's going to be a great, great weekend for it.
And even if you don't live near St. Louis, the Collinsville Convention Center that it's held at is located near several decent yet inexpensive hotels, and you're within walking distance of decent but not super high class food.
I was gonna say, actually, Collinsville's a really cool place to hold a con. I gotta say, the convention center,
if it's in the convention center, the Porter's Steakhouse and the cigar bar attached to that Holiday Inn are both really good.
Well, they can't do the cigar bar anymore because there's no smoking in any bars anymore.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know what they're gonna do.
Illinois got nerfed.
Huh, well, that sucks.
But don't try to sneak Arby's in the back door because you will get busted for contraband, like happened at our con.
Which we brought in anyway.
Yeah, which we went to a different door, and it all worked out.
Apparently that door allows it. So,
big beefy
all right,
cheese.
If you want to check out DICON, that's at DICON.com. We'll also put a link to it in the show notes.
Murder, die, what is the show about, Dan?
Other con, there is a gentleman by the name of Josh Mannon who is looking to put together a convention in the Richmond, Virginia area. This is all at the point, he's just talking about it right now, and
I pronounce you man and wife.
He told me that he's looking to do this probably about 2010, but if you would like to get in on helping him get this con set up, you want to
talk
have,
about the ground floor.
Well, you know what, but hey, here's an opportunity. If you want to help get this con set up, if you've always wanted to have cons be a certain way, here's your chance. And he has set up a website to discuss this at MideastCon wikispaces.com, and I'll also put a link to this in the show notes. It actually threw me when I first saw it, because I saw Mideast Con. I'm like, they're going to have a gaming con in Dubai? This is going to be interesting. Wonder how this is going to go over with local authorities. But no, it's Mideastern U.S.
As long as it's in the green zone, it should be fine.
So,
actually, in Virginia, it may not go down well. Who knows?
All right, last of all.
Not last.
Okay, my last of all. From Fear the Con, our convention, Trampus from Dragonlance Canicle posted a review of our convention in episode 13 of the Dragonlance Canicle. We'll post a link to that. So if you want to hear what Trampus had to say about Fear the Con, be sure to check that out. And I know I've been very bad and haven't put up our Man on the Street interviews from Fear the Con, so I will get that done here shortly. So just keep watching, not our feed, but our front page at feartheboot.com, because I'm not going to put these files in the feed because they are extremely foul language, explicit.
Naughty.
So fair warning.
Who would think our listeners being foul and naughty on the air?
We have no control over what these people say, so listen to these at your own risk. But I will put them up here shortly.
You barely have control over what I say.
Well, at least I have editorial authority over what you say.
Owning the editing software is handy that way.
I know. I never sound stupid. So...
Did you see Seamus posted about us in his blog, just a big group hug for Fear the Boot in his blog, and he was like, Luke told me that editing adds 20 points to your IQ, and I'm like, I did say that, and it does.
It does, absolutely. When you take out all the ums and uhs and the jokes you tell that fall completely flat, and don't even have an ironic comedy after they fall flat, it makes you sound so much more dynamic.
Yeah, well,
here's the thing
about that is, sure, you do edit yourself out, but you seem to leave my bad jokes and my uhs and ums in. So
it's just all part of your dynamic personality.
That's okay. Hey, I'm okay with that. I want to show my faults. I could admit I had mistakes as a GM, unlike some
people
across
the person. Luke's the everyman.
I really are. What about me and my blue collar, Dan? What about me and my blue collar?
Springsteen. All right, so Luke, what's your other announcement?
Chris Angler, big friend of the show, donated a lot of stuff for Fear the Con and is very active on our message boards, has his own new podcast, WAP Caplets, which is a very short and intense podcast. So go there, listen in, because even if you don't like it, hey, you didn't waste any time. It's hot.
Luke, what is a WAP Caplet?
You're asking me. Why don't you ask Chris Angler?
Well, if he was here, I would ask him. But since you brought it up, I figured you might know something about it.
It's apparently a very small podcast.
Okay.
Well, very short podcast. I don't know about small. Could be extremely popular for all I know.
When you're talking about podcasting, size doesn't matter.
It's the motion of the ocean, not
just
size.
Throw in something else here on Chris, just the kind of guy he is. I get emails from him every so often because he does a sponsorship thing for Big Brothers and Big Sisters.
He does a lot of sponsorship stuff. He's a giver. I like that.
He is. He's very much a giver.
Seriously.
So Chris is a great guy. Definitely go over, check his show out, and give it a spin through and see what you think. Today we are going to talk about...
And we're talking about... hosting. And we're not talking about your ping, about your big pipe that people can play on. We're talking about playing at somebody's house.
Talking about what?
Your big pipe. Transferring all that data all night.
I'm sorry. I completely...
What do you want, Dan? What do you want from me? We're talking about hosting games and being a guest. I coughed. Being a guest at these games that are being hosted and how a lot of social courtesies do come into play. And what should you observe and what shouldn't you? What should the host offer? What shouldn't he? What should the guest offer? There's a lot of stuff to think about.
I agree. And, I think whenever you have a game, you're bringing people into a place where they don't normally live. And this is absolutely important because of the fact that there are some people out there that are uncourteous. Even those that are courteous probably need a good refresher, because if you piss off the people that are hosting the game,
especially the person who's hosting the game's wife.
Yeah.
Very important.
You have done just as much damage to the game as any out of control character or any bad GM technique would ever do. Okay. Well, maybe not quite to Chad caliber. For that, you'd probably have to leave a loaf on the carpet or something. So
I left you a present. Get out the OxyClean.
You know what's really not fun is when you have to interrupt the middle of a gaming session to actually get out the plunger.
All right.
Look, had to do it. Yeah, you would have to do it, Mr. Poops-a-Lot. When you came over to my house,
hold on.
Still knows you as the guy. Is Matt going to come here and take a dump?
Here's how I want to do this. Let's not do just a Mr. Polite Hour, okay? Because I think whether they remember or not, people know the basic courtesies. Let's talk about how to deal with the really uncomfortable situations that always happen and nobody knows how to talk about. Let's start with the guy you don't want taking a dump in your house, but always does.
You know, it's funny because I have been made to go to the bowling alley adjacent to they make you go to the bowling alley. That's hilarious. I'm surprised my toilet could handle you.
Do you at least put them down in the Prince bathroom?
No, back then the Prince bathroom was still being remodeled, uh-huh. So the toilet was barely even functional back then. So we made him go upstairs where my wife was, and she got used to, oh, Matt's up here. I better spray some Febreze.
We all got gifts.
Hey, I just sent Matt downstairs to turn Prince into a symbol. That basically...
Yeah, Matt poops a lot. But you know what? Hey, you got to poop. You can't get around
it. That's the difficulty of it. I hosted almost every game my group ran for a long time. We used to always have them over here.
I always think the GMs, if it's possible, it's always better for the GM to host because he's set up. He's ready to go in his environment. Well,
especially with a game like when we run a lot of Battletech and stuff. That is way too much stuff to move. It's just a massive hassle. And if you realize you forgot something, you're screwed. And that could, like in a game like Battletech, once again, hold up the entire game. So we used to always host here. And there was a guy who always came to game with us. And I and several of my friends, we think this guy has something wrong with his health. Because this man, no matter what he eats, no matter what he does, takes like 50 craps a day. And so this guy would always come over here and absolutely devastate the upstairs bathroom. But it's like, what do you do about that? Because on the one hand, you don't want this kind of thing occurring in your house, especially given the damage he was doing in some cases. But you can't tell somebody, well, don't go to the bathroom.
Yeah, hold it. Hold it back.
Rule number one, always crap as far away from the gaming space as possible.
Yes, if there's a secondary bathroom, it's always wise to go there, well, if you have permission.
Unless that is in a more private space. For example, going into somebody's master bedroom to take a dump is probably not real cool.
That is the throne in there.
Find the most distant public bathroom you can.
Like at the bowling alley.
Chair breaking. What do you do when you're at a game and you could be the host or guest? How do you handle this when somebody's sitting around the table, leans back a little too far, maybe had just a few too many Cheetos, whatever the case is, and a chair collapses beneath them? You've never had this happen?
Well, see, I've had the opposite. At my place, we bought a used table and the chairs were in pretty bad shape and they were a little dangerous. If Matt can remember, you did not want to lean back in them because you were not getting back up.
No, we all sat with very good posture when gaming at that table.
Yeah, I've never had anybody break a chair at the table, although out drinking with friends, I've had chairs break many a time.
Yeah, I don't do good with the canvas camping chairs.
I don't do well with the really hard plastic chairs that you see a lot like around pools because I like to lean and move and I get them on two legs. Yeah, two legs on those, not a good way to be.
I have quite a bit of experience here. In fact, I would say that my gaming experience is built atop the bones and bodies of a veritable sea of dead chairs. I can't tell you how many chairs have been destroyed in this house or one of my previous apartments. So
who are you gaming with?
Well, you know what's funny is in some cases, you kind of saw it coming.
Maybe they should have taken a crap before they came over.
The person was, say, portly. Or
a portly gamer? No.
Maybe they were leaning back in the chair or doing something they probably shouldn't have been doing in the chair.
Like what?
I lost, like twisting over to one side or tipping it up on one leg as they try to reach something or, you know,
fat pipe.
Whatever. But what's funny is one of the chairs that I lost was to a guy who weighs less than I do. This guy was seriously like 130 pounds. He was tiny. Sits down in a wooden chair we had upstairs, and the thing collapses. So let me approach this from two angles. First of all, as a host, my advice to anyone who's hosting is if you're worried about it being broken, and obviously nobody wants anything if theirs broken, but if this is something where it is just going to break your bank or end your life if it's broken, don't use it when the guys come over.
This is a chair my grandfather carved.
Let your wife's friends break it.
It's a better way
because
to do
that
it.
Way you're gaining moral high ground as opposed to when your friends break it after clogging up the toilet, in which case you're losing moral high ground.
You can't have your friends over again. They ruin our house.
Yeah.
Also, very nice antique wooden tables, not necessarily the best gaming surface. Yeah,
precisely. And if you don't have anything that you're willing to sacrifice to a game, you probably need to set aside a little bit of money and go down to your local Target or Walmart or Goodwill or something and buy yourself a table and a bunch of chairs you just don't care about. Plus, you know what? Sometimes it's better because I tell you, the cheap crap and the old crap a lot of times is built more sturdy than the higher end stuff.
This is true.
Because it's not made for appearances. It's just made to support a big, broad ass. So backing up a thought, as let's take keeping this from the host angle on our previous subject, the best advice I have to a host is don't make a big deal out of it because the person's got to go when they got to go. And if you make a big deal out of it, you're just embarrassing them. So
of course, sometimes that's all right.
Yeah.
Sometimes, sometimes
it depends how good of friends you are.
Sometimes it's just funny.
Like I would give Matt all kinds of crap. I still do. It's great. It's
cool. And Matt gave you all kinds of crap.
Yeah. See, I haven't broken any of your chairs.
Yet.
I'm not talking about chair breaking.
What'd I do?
Wind breaking.
We're talking about taking a crap.
I took a crap here.
He gave you all kinds of crap because he keeps messing up the toilets of your house.
Wow. This is a great chain of thought. I mean, very smooth transition there.
Feel the shiza.
Excellent work there.
All right. Let's go to being a guest.
Being a guest. Rule one.
Take a dump before you go.
Well, okay. Rule two. It's always wise, if you're a guest, to bring something, whether it be a bag of chips, some soda.
Well, let's one topic at a time now, Lucius.
What are we talking about?
Chair breaking. You're at somebody's house. You break their chair.
I didn't know this was going to be this whole topic.
Well, no, we're going to finish one thought before we move on.
What are you even talking about?
I don't feel good about this organization thing.
All right,
yeah,
fine.
This is great. No, fine. Seriously. Chair breaking, go.
All right, if you're at somebody's house and you are a guest, first of all, be mindful of the furniture.
Don't lean back.
Don't lean back in the chairs. Don't twist to the side. If you notice a chair is unstable or you think it's unstable, politely ask for a different one. Stop the problem before it starts. If it happens, the polite thing to do is to at least offer to help the person out for the chair. Say, oh man, I'm sorry I broke that. Can I help you replace it? Or if you can't even do that, you know what? We had people at some of our games who, after getting glowers from Carla enough times, started bringing their own folding chairs.
I've actually seen that.
Dear Lord, how many chairs got broken?
A ton. If Carla was awake, we're recording this for the listener's sake. We're recording this at about 11:30 at
night. This is our latest podcast. It's like the midnight cast.
Yeah, because we did an interview before this and had some mic problems, whatever. But Carla's upstairs sleeping. If she wasn't, I'd get her down here to tell you. I'm not exaggerating when I say that my gaming experience is a graveyard of furniture.
I can't remember the last chair that was broken.
We lost a couch in a game.
Okay, now, if someone's losing a couch, someone's just being very incautious as a large person.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. This gentleman jumped up in the air with the kind of grace and nimbleness you would not think a man of his stature would even have.
Why was he LARPing at your game?
This was actually right after a game. Jumped in the air, threw himself kind of laterally, and then flop down onto the couch, and the first thing I hear is snap, and a beam that goes across the front of the couch, that's part of the main structure of the couch, had completely broken in half.
A load-bearing candy cane, that's what you're saying?
Apparently.
Couches are meant to take static loads, not dynamic middle-of-the-beam shocks.
That's rough. I can't remember anybody ever breaking furniture at my games. Other stuff's been broken. I mean, like little stuff that you'd imagine, but not that.
I actually know some people who, through the Living Greyhawk community, whenever we go to game days, that's just part of their loadout. Because, if you're playing in the back of an odd game store or who knows where you're going to end up, bringing your own comfortable chair along with you is just, it's an option.
This is a part of gamer culture I have no part of.
I'm not saying it's that common. I'm just saying I've seen it done.
Like you bring your dice bag and your gamer chair?
Well, no, you just leave a chair in the car in case you need it.
Man, I wish people started doing it with porta-johns. Now, along those same lines, if you spill food or drink, don't just sit there.
Seriously.
It's really not all that hard. Get your ass off the broken chair, walk past the destroyed couch, get some paper towels. All right, Luke, along the lines of food and drink, go with your thought.
Bringing food. Obviously, somebody is giving up their living space hosting, and most likely, and most of the time, the GM also gives out soda, water, food, all kinds of stuff that they have handy. So it's always wise, if you are a guest, like as any time you're a guest in somebody's house, is to help him supply. If the GM is sacrificing his own place especially, it's good to bring in food, whether it be some fruit, some chips, Mountain Dew, whatever gaming accoutrements you enjoy. donate to it, you know, and which is something I can be a lot better about at Dave's. I've only brought something a timer again, as opposed to like Pat, who brings the beef jerky and a ridiculous amount of his salt and nuts every time he comes to town.
This is something I got to say with Dave and his wife. They're awesome hosts.
Oh, Laura and Dave's. Well, it's Dave's fiance.
I'm sorry.
That cooks for us. She'll cook dinner for us sometimes. Sometimes she'll have bread for us all the time. She'll make homemade bread. Like, they are the perfect hosts. They always have stuff ready, and she'll come down and serve it.
Before the last game, I had a message on my phone from Dave calling me. Yeah, Laura's going out grocery shopping. What kind of soda do you want? So this is definitely one where I've got to be careful not to take advantage. I need to bring some snacks to donate to this, because this is not Dave's Gaming Soup Kitchen.
It's a community event where a group of people are coming together with the common goal of having a good time. So somebody's got to produce the lubricant for the wheels of fun.
Think of it, if you're like us and your gaming session goes through dinner, think of it like a potluck. You guys might go out for dinner, but it's always wise to bring something to snack on in the meantime. Or you can take a break and cook steaks like we did that once. That was for a going away party, though, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. On the other side, I've run into a thing in our gaming group where we've sometimes had restrictions on locations based off of babysitting schedules.
What about restrictions on food, like, say, chili?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to have vegetarian chili ever again. Ever again. But anyway, neither here nor there. So our one buddy, when sometimes we have to game at his house because he's got kid issues, and, you know, that's okay. But what it does mean is that a lot of us are driving 35 plus miles to get to his house for a night of fun, which is, it's a sacrifice we're willing to make. But, you know, when there are 3-4 cars driving many, many miles to get to a place to accommodate someone's schedule, he reciprocates with, hey, it's an open fridge, there's plenty of soda and stuff. In that case, it seems less that he's being a gracious host and more that, rather than having to pay for gas, he's like saying, here is my soda.
Yeah.
Drink up.
That's cool.
If I was to sum this up in one simple phrase, it'd be, don't take anything that anyone else is doing for granted. Be mindful of what the people around you are offering to the game, whether it's furniture or food or driving time.
Or poop.
And I guess in the case of poop, don't be too grateful, but with the rest of them, you know, be grateful for that and try to do something to reciprocate. Arrival times. This is one loop where you can look at me ugly.
What? Oh, I can't, because I'm typically a little late myself. The only reason I'm typically early over at Dave's is because Dave and I tend to meet a little early either to play War Machine, or lately I've been helping him with the rules conversion for Savage Earth Dawn. So I've been on time. Generally, I'm running a little behind myself.
I see, but if you're going to be a little bit late to a game, probably not a big deal. If you're going to be really late, call and let people know, because if you don't, they're sitting around waiting for you to show up. They don't know where.
Breaking chairs,
spilling drinks, crapping in every toilet. I mean, it's just all things you expect at a gaming session.
Well, then, and it's always good to synchronize how things are going to kick off. Because, like, if half of the people show up and they've already eaten, and half of the people show up with takeout and, you know, want a little bit of time to scarf down their lunch, you know, among other things, you're losing potential valuable play
time.
Yeah,
this actually comes up because half the people come to Dave's game don't eat, and the other half eat fast food beforehand. So it's like, hey, let's go grab something. Oh, we already ate. Okay, let's work this out. So we need to communicate a little better there. So get on page with your gaming group. And I've always found, go ahead and just, if you have to start an hour early, if you can, do so. But the first hour is just going to be socializing. You're going to jackjaw, you're going to talk about stuff, maybe eat some food, and then you're going to get into the game. It takes a little while to get warmed up, and everybody likes to talk beforehand anyway.
Here's another one. This one has also happened several times in my gaming group. What do you do about the guy in your group who knows no loofah?
I don't know who you're gaming with. I've not had a stereotypical smelly gamer in my group.
I've had three.
Now, care to name them?
No, I won't name them. But I've had in my group, and now we've had a pretty large number of players over the years come and go. So I'm talking here like 20 years of history. But I've
What, Tex?
No, Tex is actually, he's a hairy man, but he's a very well-groomed hairy man. But,
he'll be so delighted to hear.
But I've had at least three people in my group, and of these, only one has ever been on this show, who, I'll just
leave it. I already think I know.
You can probably guess, but I'll leave it at that, and who have come into my house, and when they leave, not everything they brought with them went.
It's the beast. Look, here's the thing.
How do you deal with that?
If you're gaming with somebody, and chances are you know them fairly well, or at a certain point you do. I don't have a problem bringing up basic hygiene to people. If somebody stinks, I'll probably let them know if it seems like they don't. I don't want to make them feel embarrassed. I don't want to hurt their feelings. But, you know, if I stink, if I smell really bad for some reason, I would expect my friends to tell me.
See, and this is where it's very difficult, because with these people, they were friends. These are not people whose feelings you want to hurt. And on top of that, we had a pretty good idea that with at least one of them, part of the reason that he did not take good care of himself was because of very low self-esteem, that he already had so little self-esteem, he did not care much about himself. And so we spent a lot of time struggling with this, that for our sake, we have to tell this guy, dude, we love you and all, but you need to take a shower and put on some deodorant. But at the same time, we struggled very much about how to approach this, because we had trouble thinking of a good way to do it. And the thing that kind of finally got us to talk to this guy was something that you just said there, Luke, which is that we realized, you know, by not saying anything, we're not doing this person any favors, because it's not like this person just stinks at our games.
Yeah.
This is a person who may not be getting jobs or, mm-hmm. you know, is going to be getting funny looks on public transportation or whatever, because this problem is going to be with them everywhere. And so if we want to improve the overall quality of this person's life as his friends, we ought to step in and say something.
Well, and then on top of that, like, basic hygiene is expected in American society. It's, you know, it's something that everybody here, we are a culture that bathes every day, sometimes multiple times. And even like if I was at a convention and I was with somebody who was intolerably stinky, I would say something. You're offending me and my bubble. This is the area. I'm American. I own this area around me where I stand. And your stank is getting in here. I'm probably going to say something. I'm probably not going to be mean about it, but I'm going to let you know, dude, you stink. Do you know you stink? Is it old clothes or do you just stank it? Fix it. Come on. I mean,
but is there a polite way to do this?
I think at a certain point, you don't need to be.
If they're not getting the subtle hints, sometimes you just got to drop the hammer of truth.
Yeah.
Bam.
Everybody just so subtly scoots away from him. Here's the key. He brings some Febreze with you. When he's not looking, spritz the mofo.
That actually happened to one of these people. We were out somewhere and some girl sprayed him with perfume.
Now, remember, if you're traveling, you do have to check the baggage with Febreze. You can't take it with you on a plane.
Yeah. Well, and then, okay, there's the other thing. A lot of people carpool to cons and various things. If you got the stinky guy in the car with you, you are screwed if you don't say
something. And if you don't say anything about it and or they don't do anything about it, then the position you're left in is having to exclude this person, which is just going to create more hurt feelings. Because now all of a sudden it's going to be you got three cars of guys going over to a con, and now everyone's just trying to pawn Mr. Stinky off on the other car.
Mr. Stinky loses the stink at the first gas station that you come to, or you're going to have a long-lasting...
Yeah.
Tough acting,
you
know, problem.
All right, well, let's try and give some useful advice here. I'd say first thing is have a one-on-one. Don't group molest this person.
And be polite.
It's a lot less
threatening. Start polite anyway.
It's a lot less threatening when one person says it than when you're getting ganged up on.
Once the problem has been dealt with, then everybody can kind of get together and laugh at, hey, Bob, remember when you used to smell like behind? But you're right.
Remember when you used to smell like the Prince bathroom?
In the beginning, you know, just taking somebody by the shoulder and, hey, I wanted to let you know about something.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you can be friendly about it and be polite. And I mean, like I said, if I stink and somebody came up to me like, hey, you know, we like gaming with you. We like hanging out with you. You're a lot of fun. But look, you smell kind of funky. Do you know that? This is called deodorant.
It's the sort of thing where everybody has an off day where, like, their only way to hit the gym was to right before the game, and, you know, they might be a little...
Oh, come on. We're talking about gamers here.
Hell, I had to freshen up on the way over. Today was one of those days where it started out with the heater on in my office, and then it got really humid and hot, and I was sweating all day towards the end of the day, so on the way over here, I had to freshen up so you guys didn't smell my stank.
Yeah, and you know what? It's and you'd hope most people would have that kind of courtesy, but many don't. So,
and that's just that's not limited just to gamers. There's
absolutely
plenty of people who are a little bit more swampy than they should be at social events.
Many times I have sat in ball games or any number of other things and had to sit next to somebody else. But we're picking on gamers here because we're a gaming podcast, not because gamers are the only people in the world.
Yeah, you know, it's a fallacy that the gamer stereotype doesn't apply like it used to. We've talked about that many, many times. I mean, there are those stereotypical gamers out there, but these days they're few and far between, I think. At least with the people I game with.
Apparently not so much here.
I don't include those people because they stink.
Well, you know, I guess you run into it more in a travel type situation where you're sitting down with a table of strangers and, you know, it's a roll of the dice. What you're going to get as far as the quality of the gamer and the quality of the hygiene, the quality of the judge.
See, at a con, I just ride it out. That if a con, I just find a spot on the other side of the table or something, just ride it out. Because here's somebody that I'm going to know for a whopping 4 hours of my life. Is it really worth me looking like an asshole for something that's probably going to create no real change anyway? So
I don't know, man.
Actually, Dan,
if you sit next to Stinky McCat P shirt, that can
Dan,
be rough.
I would actually go so far as to say, you know, especially when you're in a stranger situation, you definitely want to say something. I mean, do it in a non-confrontational way. But, you know, at the end of the session, it's like, hey, man, can I talk to you for a second? And just let them know. Because
a gamer intervention, man to man.
Right.
You smell bad.
Because the other thing is, you never know when you're going to be gaming with that guy again. Just by happenstance. And he may hate you, but at least you won't have to smell him. It's the pragmatist in me.
Speaking of other uncomfortable situations, I think most people have gamed with a couple at this point, you know, whether they be married or boyfriend and girlfriend. And there are a few things more uncomfortable is when a fight breaks out of that. When they start, you know, it usually start with some kind of bickering in game and explodes into some bigger issue like happens. And it spills out. Everybody sits there like, we just want to roll some dice. Why are you guys talking about?
Where did that just happen to me recently? I can't think where it was. I was just in a situation like this where it's like a whole room of us and this one couple starts just going at it and everyone else sitting there is having to kind of squirm in their chairs and look at each other and smile, and it's horribly uncomfortable. If you are a couple, chill out. It can wait till you get home. Don't embarrass yourselves in front of other people and take these other people who are either your guests or if you're not hosting, these probably include your host, and put them in an extremely uncomfortable situation.
My experience is that somebody in that argument is typically going to be irrational enough that they don't care about the other people. Then they only care about their own problems, and they're going to inflict on everybody there because they're selfish.
So what do you do if you're the other person at the table?
Walk away, go outside.
Have time to take a break.
Yeah. If you're Matt, you go poop.
Good.
If you're somebody who comes over to Dan's house, break a chair. You know, whatever your pastime is, indulge it, because you're not going to be gaming for a while.
Maybe
and the night might be over anyway.
Make a food run.
You know, this is one of those situations where I almost think this is where you need to be a little bit of a jerk, because
it's ruining everybody's fun.
Yeah, it's ruining everybody's fun. It's unnecessary. And of course, when two people are already riled up like that, most people, and I know there are exceptions, but most people get a little bit sheepish and kind of want to back away. But this may be one of those situations where you've got to step up and say, guys, knock it off, save it till you get home, or if they're the host, until we're gone. Or if you just are in a situation where you can't do that, maybe you just politely excuse yourself. Say, you know, I come here for, I don't mean any harm, no offense to anybody, but I come here to relax, not to be in this kind of drama. I think I'm just going to go ahead and go, and I'll catch you guys next week, or, you know, I'll send you all an email later, something like that, and take your stuff and leave. And I guarantee you, even just those little acts will probably embarrass them to the point they won't do it again.
Well,
and if they do,
not at that time, though. I mean, it'll probably be afterwards when everything's calmed down. It's like, wow, we really messed up and embarrassed ourselves. So if somebody starts fighting, chances are your session's ruined. I mean,
so yeah, you might as well get out of there, because it's very hard to recover a game after that.
Grab your XP and walk away.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time that those of us who aren't nuts so crazy, we'll go and play a board game somewhere with the rest of our time.
Yeah, let's go hang out with people who are fun.
To the Arby's.
Well, there was I can't remember the name of the skit on SNL, but there was the couple that always fights, and it was basically just them getting into these big fights in social situations and making everybody uncomfortable. And the thing is, yeah, it's good comedy because everybody's experienced that.
Right.
And most people have been that at one point in their life or another, or at least been part of an argument where, okay, you're embarrassing all of us. Stop arguing with me. I don't want to fight here.
And I have met some couples that are really funny to watch fight, in which case that's okay, because that's entertainment. Well, but they're few and far between.
Yeah.
Usually it's just uncomfortable.
Yeah, to say the least. So watch out for that. I mean, gaming with couples can be interesting anyway, especially if somebody, one of those is the GM. You got to watch out, because the other one might get benefits that you don't get.
Like, or extra information.
Exactly. Well, or you can have our setup. When I ran Hackmaster, when I played Hackmaster, our GM, his wife played with us, and completely milk the GM for information about some of the traps coming up. So we would, so she's like, okay, here's what to watch out for this adventure, because Hackmaster's pretty tough. We didn't want to die. Anything's legal, baby. We got to get all the information we can on what's coming up. Good times.
It's really a win-win. You know, she gets information, he gets prostate health.
Dan, did you have anything else?
I did. I got one more.
Do it.
Unless you guys got more. I got one more. And this is another one that may not have come up for a lot of people. Maybe it has. I don't know. For me, it's come up several times, which is, as far as it is polite to ask, know the religious views of the people you game with. And I say this for two reasons. One, with most people, there's typically nothing they hold more dear than whatever their religious worldview mm-hmm. is. And so by knowing that, you can know right off the bat where you might likely offend this person. But on top of that, and this is where I think it's actually become more of an issue, and I say issue here loosely, I mean, issue isn't something we have to respond to, not an issue isn't a problem, is depending on the person's religious views, there might be certain things you have to do. For example, for a while, we gamed with an Orthodox Jew. And so we had to be careful about, you know, well, if we're going to have a barbecue before the game, we've got to think about, well, we don't want to exclude this person, so we need to be sure to have something special set aside that's kosher, whatever, well, so sure. They have a way to eat.
Well, you know, but
not having your games on Saturday morning if you're gaming with someone who observes, sure. who's either Jewish or Seventh-day Adventist or whatever. These are the kinds of things that, you know, in a game you may not always want to think about, but you need to know these things because they're important to the person who holds these views.
Well, and then it comes down to, again, most of the time you're going to be gaming with friends, and it's going to be something you're going to, a need you're going to be fulfilling anyway. You know, say they have something they need, like kosher food, so you want them to be a part of it. So you're going to do everything you can to express that. Like, it's not, we don't want to exclude you. It's please, we want to include you.
Right.
How can I help you?
Yeah. Alrighty. Next subject up. Epic level gaming.
We touched on this last week.
You know, typically in Fear the Boot, we touch on this sort of as a joke or a don't do this. But, you know,
did before I came on.
Let's define epic level gaming. Then let's talk about why you might actually want to do this. This is kind of advice like using leeches or maggots in medicine. There are reasons you might want to do this or seeing an optometrist. So,
it hurts so bad.
Like say you're a disabled Coliseum fighter and you've got a septic wound.
I'm not responding to any of your comments at this point.
I was talking about the leeches
and maggots.
I know. Really? Because you'd go for a septic wound to an optometrist anyway. Huh?
Excuse me, Mr. Eye Doctor. Can you clean out the wound of my unconscious friend?
The then I can clean it out.
Oh, then we'd want to see an ophthalmologist.
No, you wouldn't. You'd want to come see me first. I'm the gatekeeper. I'm primary care.
You're primary caregiver?
Yes. I'm primary care for the eye. You come to me first. You can skip me and go to ophthalmologist for some stuff, but you're only hurting yourself.
I have a PPO, so I go to see whoever I want.
You have a PP?
I do. Oh.
All
right, epic level gaming. With epic level gaming, let's leave out superhero games.
Sure.
That's a world unto itself. We are talking about a game where you're playing a character who has progressed in a world of normals to being something of just incalculable power. Level 20 plus in D&D. You know, you take a game like, I don't know, Savage Earth or Savage Worlds.
You don't even know where to go here because you didn't have an experience.
And you just take yourself up way past like the veteran levels. You keep yourself XP
legendaries,
points.
Way past legendaries, which we're looking
for. So you just keep
100
going.
Plus XP for storyteller.
You're like, I don't have anywhere to go after this Atlas. There's nothing over 100 tons.
Can I pilot a world?
Like Unicron.
So what's the positive aspect of epic level game? Because we always kind of make fun of it as just sort of a munchkin or twink fantasy.
But
there is some reason. There are good uses for this.
Well, I mean, there are games that are like that. Once you get to a certain power level in games, a lot of stuff tends to break down. But also some games are designed for the higher levels of play. You look at D&D, and once you get above 20th level, things do start to break down and things get really, really wacky is what happens mm-hmm. where it just completely breaks even the physics you're used to of the game. that it, you know, that's a bit of a, can be a bit of a wank. Now you can still, that also gives you to the chance to fight ridiculously powerful. You know, you can fight gods, do what you want. And if that's your bag, hey,
right,
that's cool.
And that to me seems like the place that these games take you is you go somewhere you can't go as a regular character. For example, you want to run a kingdom. You, whether your character's level 1 or level 20, either way, you're walking around with an epic level of power here. You want to get involved in the politics of the Pantheon.
Well, see,
you want to get involved with the real movers and shakers of a realm. Yeah, these are all the things where you've got to be at the epic level in order to even participate.
I completely disagree with you there, because there are plenty of games out there where I've always wanted to run a game where somebody runs a noble house or part of
right.
the government and grows it and maybe manages a town, that kind of thing. And yeah, if you're looking at it from like a D&D perspective, yeah, you've got to be really high level to do that in game. But there are plenty of games out there where you can just start out by doing that. You know, Reign is a big one. It's a newer one. There was Birthright. There.
Well, but once again, the word I used was kingdom. And if you run a kingdom, mm-hmm. whether your character is level 1 or level 100, you have behind you so much power and influence. In my mind, you've hit epic level.
But look,
I mean, when you can command thousands of soldiers and castle mages, and
it all depends on what scale you're at.
Matt hit it on the head. It's all about scale. You're not thinking big enough, Dan. The hair is weighing down your mind,
uh-huh.
so it's just so narrow. You got to think. Think of all the different stories that are available to you. If instead of just running a guy, you are a guy in charge of a kingdom. You have
right.
all kinds of political stories available. You have stuff dealing with armies and diplomacy and
right.
trade. There's a ton of new stuff that becomes available when you basically take the power level above I'm a man who's or a woman who's doing something on an individual level to I run a kingdom or an organization and I can affect the world. I can make very important decisions. That it's a
How does that disagree with anything I said?
Because you were saying it's a wank fantasy, pretty much.
No, I said no such thing. I said that
Narrow mind.
Uh-huh. Okay, so as I was saying, that if you go up to the epic levels, whether through power or through influence, this opens up new stories that you can tell otherwise, which Luke then disagrees with me on and then restates in different words.
Well, you were calling it munchkin-y, which...
No, I said we've typically dismissed it as munchkin-y, but
okay.
that is not true. There are...
He adds all these qualifiers
Luke,
when we bring it back
up. Luke, you got burned because he used logic and recall on you.
I don't know if he...
Go
well,
back.
It's almost midnight. I can't recall much.
When you're listening
point.
To this episode, listen to 5 minutes ago.
All right, pause the tape. We're going to go back and listen to it.
All right, now, like I said, I hesitate when people tell me they want to run a power level game.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, like as I said before, and we'll say again,
well,
there are stories where it's appropriate.
And to back you up on this, to agree with you, which is very odd for me to do, but to agree with you on this, when somebody does say, I want to run this high power level game, yeah, you need to think, okay, because typically it is going to get wanky and munchkin. You've got to make
right.
sure they've got a really good goal for it. Or the game's designed for it. You get a game like Amber or Nobilis where the power level starts out at you can do basically anything you want to do, and you've got to work with that. And if you're a GM willing to handle that, more power
to
you.
First problem I've seen right there is the player attitude coming into it. That do they see epic level as being, okay, we are now going to tell a compelling story at a different level of existence, or are we just going to act like we were out there doing the same thing we've always been doing, now we just can get away with everything?
Yeah, well, see, when you do that,
because I'm a god and I can turn mortals into sheep, or I'm a king and I can just put everybody
well,
to
not,
death.
That being said, occasional examples where you get to show, wow, I really am a badass. I don't think that's necessarily a problem as long as that's not the focus.
Right, exactly.
I think that can be done at any power level, though. But
well,
at high level, it's more common.
Because it's easier.
Yeah, exactly. It's much easier to do.
At level 1, you can't get away with much.
No, because a cat might kill you if you're a mage.
Right.
The thing I've found is that the stories that can be told at these high-level games, when they are told well, they can be really powerful.
Yes.
They can be really, really good because... It's rare. It's kind of one of those, I won't say holy grail, but it's something that doesn't happen much in a role-playing game. Because once you get to high level, it does become, you know, everybody still is in that first level mindset of go and kill things and take their stuff. If you can rise above that, and if as a whole the group can do that, you can tell some really good stories.
You know, and I'm going to be very careful using this word, but I
plethora?
Almost think, no, that word I'll just say anywhere.
Cornucopia?
So, let me plethora back to my original cornucopia, and... you know, one word here I'd hesitate to use, but it's the best word comes to mind, is when you're running a high-level game, you have to make sure the players at that level of power still feel threatened. And now this doesn't mm-hmm. have to be the easiest way to threaten a player is with combat powers.
Sure.
That you may be a demigod, but there's a greater god over here who can stomp your butt at any given moment. But it may not be that. You could be in a game where you're just some massive king on a hill who rules as far as you can see, but you still might be trying to accomplish something that the powers that be, even if they're far lesser than you, can keep you from accomplishing.
You said something key right there. You were trying to accomplish something.
Yes.
That is the key to the higher
level. You're not just
stuff.
Walking around admiring yeah. your...
Look how awesome I am.
Right. At lower levels, you might be able to impose your will on a single opponent or a small group of opponents. But at that level, you're imposing your will, your dreams on nations,
right.
worlds,
right.
on the entire universe, depending on what
and
kind of skill you're
there has to be
at.
The believable threat that you can fail. And whether that's failing because somebody kicks your ass or it's failing because you just somebody's going to undermine your plans or things just won't go the way you hoped, there has to be some belief that you cannot accomplish everything, because if you can, it's like playing a video game on a god
yeah,
mode.
Why,
it's fun for 5 minutes and then it gets really old.
Because there's no challenge. Yeah,
right.
If somebody's running a kingdom, you have certain needs and goals. You may want to try to feed your people, or you have a trade route, that kind of thing. Well, another kingdom can't say, oh, well, we're sending people to attack that trade route. We're funding bandits on it. And so then all of a sudden, you've got to decide, well, do I go fight the bandits? Do I take on this other kingdom? Do I do it blatantly and send knights, or do I do it via intrigue? And
ninjas.
And yeah, ninjas. Or what if, what if the other kingdom who's fighting you has some sort of mutual agreement pact with another kingdom? And if you attack them, they attack you. Threats come from all over as long as the players are invested in more than just their character. If they care right. about whatever they're ruling or in charge of, then you've done their job, because they have to, then everybody's a threat.
I think you're getting on to something very important. When you're talking about low-level characters, or at least characters whose powers are limited in scope, the story that you tell can be fairly simple. You know, you're running a mission to save the princess or to guard the trade caravan.
The princess is another castle.
Well, yeah, you'll find that out later, though. But the point is, your concerns are small in scope, but as you gain in status and power, you also have to have that increased buy-in so that you really know the world's backstory and kind of feel the things changing around you. And that's when the epic level type stuff is really appropriate.
And see, I find that most games have a big disconnect here, and a lot of this comes from people who started playing, like myself, on D&D, where as you gain in power level, while you all of a sudden become one of the most powerful people in the world, it never shows in the game world. You're usually tackling a very specific threat, or you're going out and just looting things and taking their stuff, the typical D&D things, and it's not shown, well, oh, you're a 15th level mage, you know, kingdoms X, Y, and Z all want to recruit you to come and, you know, teach their wizards or lead their people to battle, because right. you are one of the most powerful people in the world.
See, and this is... player attitudes is what I keep bringing it back to, that if you have the mindset that once you get really powerful, all that happens is you deal with the same things, it's just now they're a joke, you have completely missed the boat of what epic level gaming could offer you. Mm-hmm. You've always got to keep your eye on something that your characters are after that can be believably threatened.
And on top of that, a lot of game systems, unfortunately, don't support this very well, as we kind of talked about earlier.
Yeah, this is the point I wanted to come back to. So go ahead.
Let me give an example from one of Sean's vampire games. Sean used to run 1,000-year vampire games. He'd start in 1000 AD and run up to current day. And he'd take, of course, big time bits of downtime where he said, here's what I do during my downtime. You know what? Here's what we're going to do over the next 2 centuries while we're not dealing with a current story arc. And while White Wolf certainly did have some systems in there to kind of guide you, you know, we had one of our players go and create just a ridiculous number of children because there was no reason not to in the original system. You didn't lose anything by creating basically other vampires. And he had an army that he kept secret so it wouldn't be raided until the time where it could pop up. You know, all the constraints that are on you for individual play really aren't there in a lot of systems if you open things up to the long term.
Right. And I've seen this in quite a few games. I used to game with a group, and this happened before I was gaming with them, but they were playing Western Star Wars. This was years ago, pre-D20 Star
Wars. Yahtzee Star Wars.
Yeah, they're playing Yahtzee Star Wars. And they hit a point where their characters had become so powerful that effectively they broke the system. And what they ended up having to do was said, you know, we want to keep playing these characters, but effectively we have run out of things to do. And so they kind of broadened the view of the game to now include all these major players and extremely powerful characters, which before were just kind of forces of nature in the background. And now suddenly they're dealing with them. And they ended up whipping up their own homebrew to run this. Now, a homebrew may not be necessary. Some games have optional support for it. Like, for example, D&D has books for epic levels. Mm-hmm. There are other games, or thing like Battletech had Succession Wars. And there are other games, though, that have are built that way, where, you know, Exalted, where you start out at some...
Which I want to get back to in a minute.
Too. Some obscene power level. But you've got to have that in mind, that if you're going to go to that next level, be sure your game supports it. Because if you take the basic player's handbook for many of the role-playing games out there, and you try to run a game at a power level way above what they ever intended, maybe the rules do support it, but it hits that very edge, that very periphery of what the rules were meant to do, it doesn't really work. That you will quickly find nothing's balanced, the characters really don't make a lot of sense in terms of the rules anymore. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go out and try this sometime. And
you're out of the sweet spot of game balance and design.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And talk about sweet spot. I remember seeing the epic level rules for the first time for 3E and seeing that they gave a DC to swim up a waterfall. And I'm like, yeah, that kind of is not, you know, in D&D, that's just not something I think about. It's like all of a sudden you can swim up a waterfall. You know,
it's a really hard check.
Yeah, okay. It's, nonetheless, it's
DC 75.
It kind of breaks the verisimilitude.
Well, if you're at epic level, not only can you use words with lots of syllables, but, you know, you're well beyond like normal mortal people. You're beyond heroic. You're a paragon of...
You're Baron von Badass or Lord Rabelar.
Getting back to Exalted, which we've brought... It's come up like 10 podcasts in a row now. But it does start, and we talked about this in the Graduate Your Game, it does start pretty much where epic level D&D stops. You know, it starts basically, you're level 20, you are far superior to your mortal man. But the thing is, the setting is crafted in such a way that that's completely balanced. You might be able to raise an army and lead them to victory and rule a province within a few game sessions, if not right away, but every threat to the world is epic and mega, and
right,
and not done in such a way that it's cheesy either. It is such a well put together setting and just ripe for adventure. The game already assumes that you are going to break everything in that setting, and it sets the dominoes up for you.
You know what this brings to mind is the way that Dave explained War Machine to me.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe it was Chad, one of the two of them.
Every single model's broken.
Every model is equally broken. That I'm in that first round, he comes up there with his whatever and just does this obscene stuff. And I'm like, that is complete BS. I mean, that's ridiculous. There's nothing I could do to stop. He splintered half my army. But then the next round, I turn around and do the exact same thing.
Yep. One of the greatest things about that game, as opposed to typical miniature games where your one little infantry trooper can't do much of anything, every single unit and troop is broken. It has epic powers and combos which can devastate people. And it's a very dynamic game because of that, and very aggressive, and it's a lot of fun to play.
But it works because it's written for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everything is written at that epic broken power level.
Now, you get people these days who are like, well, this is the unit's more powerful than this one, and there are a few that probably do need some tweaking, but overall, they've did a really good job of keeping things balanced over the course of, you know, the 5 or 6 years they've been running War Machine now. Talking about role-playing War Machine, the Iron Kingdoms, when you're a War Machine fan, and you want to role play in the universe, which they have tons of setting books for, you want to play a warcaster because warcasters are awesome, or at least something involved where you can do a lot.
You can't play a jack, so you might as well pick a warcaster.
Yeah, it's or a jack who is a warcaster. If you're Kador, but anyway, you can't start off playing. Well, you can start off like level 18 playing the warcasters, but the game's really not balanced for that. That's getting toward that's out of the sweet spot. That's getting towards kind of the end of what you can do with D20. Well, and now that D20 and 3.5 is ending, I'm wondering what War Machine's going to do. They haven't really announced what their plans are, but they have a lot of D20 books, and they have an awesome setting. Well, I hope they go to the in-house system. It'd be wise, so they wouldn't be dictated by the wiles of whatever company they decide to go under.
As far as epic gaming goes, when you're sitting down to design a campaign, you really need to approach it from a much different way than your average campaign. Think big. Think really, really big. In fact, you can't really think too big when you're dealing with game-breaking powers every day of the week.
And, you know, it's refreshing because most games you start off being relatively weak and you build up in power. And by the time you get to some point where you're not weak and you actually have a say in the world, that's where a lot of games end.
That is one of the things that I like about Epic Level Gaming is having options. That even if I am only as powerful as everyone else I'm fighting, that I'm a god amongst gods or king amongst kings or whatever, it's still nice because if you're a level one fighter, and here comes the skeleton, you don't have a whole lot of options. You can swing your sword, you can go full defensive, you can run away. I mean, there's not a lot you can do there.
Right.
Whereas when you've got a character who's more developed than that, you've got a pretty sizable list of powers or contacts or spells or mechs or underlings or insert game system here. And so I like the fact that you have choices.
Yeah. You know, the fact that you have options that go beyond even just your character individually, like you have nations at your beck and call, really opens up in all kinds of stuff you can do, and again leads to some great games if you do it right. But again, what's everybody has to be on the same page with it.
And here's my little lesson learned: never try to throw a meteor storm at a high level monk. It's really just a waste of time.
Or don't try to cast Meteo if you're an old man and it might kill you because you are one MP short of casting it.
Not so good.
No.
Pretty much, you know what I found to defeat a high level monk is Philo's plot hole.
Yeah, but you're not, you know, you've run some D&D, Dan, but let me tell you, and I've run some D&D or 3E, but we're not, you and I are in no ways schooled in the ways to manipulate the system to counteract the characters, the people who know how to manipulate the system.
No, but yeah, this is kind of what I go back to is I would say really the issue here is you shouldn't have to manipulate a system to create balance in the first place.
But once you get to, in most systems, once you get to high levels, you do, because right. They become so broken and so outrageous that you can't do anything.
Right.
Actually, that brings up a pretty good point. While it may be fun to kind of blow the doors off with an epic campaign, really, it's not something that I think you should necessarily approach as a novice.
No, because you'll end up screwing up.
Right. Seriously. You really do need to have a pretty solid knowledge base of the system that you're using if you're going to play it way out on the tail end of what it's designed for.
Right.
And, you know, honestly, and I'm going to kick myself later for even admitting this, but game systems get so broken at higher levels in most cases. It's very, very rare to find something that can maintain a very high power level that the narrative style of games work better because when it becomes descriptive, I know, when it becomes descriptive and completely story and passing the stick based, it's almost impossible to break. But now I've got to go and flog myself for even admitting that there might be a use for such games.
While you gargle hydraulic acid, or hydrochloric acid.
Hydraulic acid.
Carbolic acid?
Let me try that again.
No, that's staying in. I'm not letting you re-record that. If I can't be edited out with my dumb jokes, you can't for your typos.
Fine. But I know
that typo. Oh, wait, what?
So while you go gargle hydrochloric acid, I don't know that you have to run entirely to the narrative style of play.
No, please don't.
I agree. It handles it. But having said that, I have played in games that were designed, and these were mostly homebrews, but nonetheless, I have played in games that were designed to represent epic level play and do so still within the context of a good, well-balanced system. It's just, once again, know what the game was intended to do. You can't pick up D&D and expect to play a level 50 character normally. It's just, unless you get the right expansion books and such, because it's not made to do it. You can't pick up MechWarrior and BattleTech and expect to play the general of an army and you want to play out the actual battles of regiment on regiment. I mean, this would take you years to do. You just can't. You've got to find a game that was designed from the start to handle those kinds of things.
Which are few and far between in themselves.
Yeah, they are, because it seems that most games are really designed to deal with one character, you know, not typically a character with an army, but just one character who is dealing with events that only require a relatively small number of people. And he's more powerful than the average Joe, but not that much more powerful than the average Joe. Just something kind of special. No, not a god among men, just a...
He has to wear a helmet all day.
Yeah. I think that's going to do it for this episode. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Epic level, baby.
Woo. See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.